Yes, welcome back to World Football Daily. I'm delighted to be joined by a man who's not got too much time with us today, so we're going to get him on as soon as possible. The man that plays number 10 in our journalist starting World 11, Mr. Graham Hunter, to talk all things La Liga today. Graham, how are you, mate?
Well, I'm flattered, actually. It's a grey, cold day. I've flown from beautiful, bright blue sky to London during my European morning, and it's been a bumpy day, but... With an intro like that, I'm kind of walking half an inch taller now. Thank you.
Hey, we're always here to pick you up, Graham, whatever the weather here in the UK. I want to start, before we get into the El Clasico coming up this week, I want to start and have a look back at the weekend's action, and specifically Bilbao beating Atletico Madrid 3-0, and it really was like a blast from the past. It was like watching them back in the Europa League again.
Yeah, you're right. No, that's a good pick-up, and I think that What I would say is that there were some signs in their away display at Betis when people started asking how did they manage to pummel Betis, and to a degree the Seville side was a little bit understaffed, some injuries, maybe just gently running out of juice because of playing two high-level competitions and doing well. But if you separate how Betis played and you look at Athletic Bilbao in the 1-1 draw, Adrian, the Betis goalkeeper, was by... this is the man of the match because he was saving everything, and it should have been 3 points for Bielsa's side. And at the time, all of us who took an interest in Bilbao wanted to know what was going on. And the gentle word back, and I mean gentle word back, was that for the first time, I think, in his life, Bielsa had maybe just opened his ears a little bit to the fact that the players have, for months and months, all of us thought that they're being run off their legs. They muscular injuries have abounded. The antidote to every problem, whether it's a lack of cohesion or a lack of results or a disciplinary issue for Bielsa, is run. And I like your comparison, because when we saw them beating United, beating Lisbon and getting to the final, we could see that throughout that Europa League campaign, They could take adversity, they could go on the road, they could cope with the huge number of games because, you know, there are extra games. I think there are at least four, maybe six extra games compared to the Champions League. And by the final, by both finals that Athletic Bilbao got to, you could see that the gas was running out, and the players were mourning even then that Bielsa simply didn't understand their need to recuperate forces. But prior to the Betis match, there had been slightly less physical impact, slightly less running. You could see the energy using it on that pitch. And when Atletico Madrid went up to San Mames without Falcao, which doesn't make them a losing team automatically, that would be naive. Mm. What it does take away from them is not only the major threat, but also the guy to whom the team is structured to serve. When you saw that, and when you saw the fact that Atletico have also been laying out a lot of extra energy in the Copa del Rey, with our semi-finalists against Sevilla this week, you knew there was a chance. And the final scoreline was obviously contundente, clear, firm. But equally, they had to work very, very hard at it. And again, picking up on your analogy, I liked the way that Bilbao, when the ball wasn't going in, kept on working, kept on making the right choices. Iraola, I thought, played particularly well. I thought DeMarcus played particularly well. Sorry, Susaeta played particularly well. DeMarcus played particularly well. And they began to look comfortable. They began to look like a team which knew that they had the mental and physical resources to pick away at Atletico Madrid until the result was assured. So it was a good, fun performance. It was robust. And heaven help us all, if Bielsa is beginning to become a listening manager as well as a idiosyncratic one, then maybe he's got a future at San Mames. Don't quote me on that, because it's not my preferred position. But hell, it was good to watch. You're right.
It was fantastic to watch, Graham. Do you think that Bielsa may be calming down slightly and maybe opening his ears? Hell might freeze over as well. Do you think that's because this Llorente situation is now wrapped up? He's going to Juventus next summer, and there's less of his need to be the authoritarian figure to make sure that he and Llorente and this battle of kind of egos at Bilbao is still going on.
Oliver, I don't know. One, no, I don't think it's to do with Llorente's situation, because Llorente has barely had a sniff this season. He's only been used in extremis. He's been used to give Adoriz a rest. Adoriz has taken so much pressure off Bielsa by scoring just under 50% of the team's entire haul of goals. And I know it's not fashionable for a commentator or an analyst to answer like this, but I'll be brutally honest and say I'm not clear. I'm not sure why one of the first times in his athletic career, Bielsa has accepted that other people have a point of view which might be influential and has taken a step back from something he held to be not only self-evident, but imperative. And I could give you some blithe or glib reasoning, and I don't know why. You'd be fair to deduce that the crisis this season, the level of... I mean, the players, without, you know, gnawing on his leg in public, have been pretty clear. The briefings have been for months now that they're not happy. And maybe it's either intelligence or self-preservation, the fact that they until these last two results, they've been hovering down near the relegation zone. All of these things may have combined. But what I'm willing to do until I get a chance to speak to the players again, or speak to Bielsa, or speak to the president out there, is to say that they're a healthy force when they play like that. Spain, I think we all know, needs a cluster of 5-6 hungry clubs gnawing, you know, away at the heels of Barcelona and Real Madrid, who are superior because of talent, because of economic power, because of habit, because of momentum. And it's vital, that, you know, it's so refreshing to see Athletic Bilbao not only playing well, but giving rise to their own cantera, their own youth system, where they have a golden generation, and also challenging for trophies. Those things were really stimulating, not just in Spain, but across Europe last season. And I want to see them back. I want to see Bielsa being more intelligent than dogmatic. And for the moment, it's a positive turn.
Graham, it's funny you say about the economic situation, and it's great to have sides hungry to get at Barca and Madrid, because we had the battle of the bankrupt, as Gabriele Marcotti called it in the Times this week. Deportivo against Valencia on the weekend. Valencia have been taken over by the regional government, Marcotti described it as being nationalised. What does this mean for Valencia as a club? Is this going to have a major impact on them at all?
I think it's a shade of grey. I mean, let's be absolutely clear. Valencia would have been out of business some years ago, before Llorente, the president, took over, had it not been for the regional government. The reason it's happened is that there was such a problem is that Bankia, who are the financial organisation that holds the major part of the debt that Valencia is suffering from, irrespective of the fact that Valencia, in just under 3 years, have cut around 200 million euros off the debt, which I think is pretty damn impressive.
Yeah.
When you consider they've still been qualifying for the Champions League and are now in the knockout stages of the Champions League, matched against a Paris Saint-Germain side, which, if there's a favourite, it's by a narrow margin, and therefore if Valencia play well, there's at least a possibility of them going through to the quarterfinals and earning extra money. So if you take all that into account, Valencia's performance after they've got into the horrendous situation of very nearly 500 million euros in debt, plus having a stadium that they can't use and another stadium they can't sell. The performance, financially and corporately, has been very, very good, but it's come at a cost to the president, Llorente, who I believe is not unnaturally suffering physically and emotionally with the utterly intense workload, the pressure, and the fact that the fans are turning on him and turning on the club, because what they want is they want jam today. They don't want austerity. They don't want... They're not moved by seeing debt reduction. They're moved by seeing themselves being whipped by Real Madrid, by the threat of not being in the Champions League next season. Fans are blind in some instances. And therefore, what the regional government has done, given that there was a payment coming up for Bankia, which was imperative to be met, it has stabilised the club. It has underwritten still further the guarantees which they gave to keep Valencia afloat. They can't regionally, no matter the crisis that the Valenciano government is in themselves, and they are, believe me, They can't afford for a massive institution like Valencia Football Club to go out of business or to become bankrupt or to be sold off such that the members of the socios there no longer own the club. It's a terrific and complicated situation. What I would argue is that has happened is that the regional government has augmented its control to secure its existing stake, and it has, if you like, it has attempted to protect a valuable regional asset which they can't afford in this house of cards that we live in Spain, where all it would really take is a couple of sneezes for everybody to catch flu, not just a cold. They can't afford any further damage to be done to Valencia. That's why this has happened. And we await to see what further measures will be brought in now that it's no longer Llorente who's in sole control.
Graham, you said that it is impressive how Valencia have been able to reduce their debt and shave off a tremendous amount of money over the last 3 years. It's something that plenty of clubs could do in Spain to reduce their wage bill, especially that's the biggest outgoing cost in a football club. But not many teams willing to do that. And it almost takes every single one of them to do that. Otherwise, you get a kind of situation like Aston Villa in England, where there's a team trying to reduce their wage bill and get the club secure again financially, and it's getting lost behind. Do you agree with that kind of comparison?
Well, I mean, you've asked a very broad question, so I can't say no, I don't agree with you, but yeah. I think there are one or two nuances that need to be picked up on, because, I mean, the principal thing to criticise Spain about is not necessarily what they're doing now, but how they've got themselves into the mess that they are in. Because if you look at Real Betis, for example, they were in an horrendous debt situation, and the mess which the previous administration was allowing to unfold brought 70,000 people protesting on the streets over the biggest protest in the history of that city about anything. And they're now run by a board and a man, the president, Guillen, I think, has also produced outstanding numbers, has also managed to cut debt, is taking the club out of administration, is tailoring their investment based on what they have available. It has brought the club up under a good coach to not only the Primera, but stayed there and is now hovering about the Champions League positions. And that isn't a unique case. If you look at Levante, Levante's situation, pound for pound, because the debt wasn't as big at Levante as it was at Valencia, pound for pound, Levante were in a worse situation. They were utterly bankrupt. They were being badly run. Their playing staff, their main assets, in other words, were being treated ridiculously, not being paid. Players were having to sell their houses, sell their cars. Set the foreign players were having to send their families home because there was no wage coming in. Some footballers went a year and a half, 2 years without a wage. That's scandalous. Mm. Absolutely scandalous. Currently, under President Kiko Catalan, they're coming out of administration. They've not only secured arrangements with their debtors, but are meeting them rigorously. And lo and behold, Levante qualified last year, stayed up, qualified for the Europa League, are playing competitively in the Europa League and are in the knockout rounds. Every year there's a turnover of players, but because at the moment their main talent spotter and signer, Salvador, Senior Salvador, which I love given that's the Spanish for saviour, is buying low, selling high on a repetitive bulk basis, such that A, they make money on players they take in, and B, even when they sell them for the moment, because it's not sustainable indefinitely, the football performance is not only not going down as they sell certain players, it's increasing. So these are only two examples. And for example, if you want to go to the Behemoth rather than the little boys, Barcelona's debt has been reduced by, I think, in the region of 130 million euros under the current president. And there is, it's not austerity at the Camp Nou, there is certainly a different policy about buying, selling, amortization, putting, you know, effort into commercializing the brand a little bit more, the change of sponsor, which means that they're now taking money from Qatar Airlines, the Qatar Foundation, pardon me, rather than solely donating money to what was UNICEF. So all I would say is that the picture is as grave as you mentioned, but it isn't static. It's not as if there's no movement. It's not as if there's no realization. There are some bright people applying their minds to it. The great crime is how long it was allowed to fester for and how much stupidity was poured into making it so.
Graham, let's move on to on the pitch and upcoming this week, the El Clasico Copa del Rey semi-final on Wednesday night, Real Madrid against Barcelona. Both sides in flying form, and Madrid have just been so electric since coming back after the winter break. Where do you see the key matchups being in this?
Well, I mean, just to finalise our chat, then the thing that I think is vital to understand is that, you know, having struggled for a little while to understand how to play Barcelona, it's been some meetings now since Jose Mourinho has gone back to tactics which made Inter Milan successful under him when they played Barcelona in the semi-final of the Champions League in 2010. It's not pure long ball football, but it is undoubtedly asking the quarterbacks, whether it be Cadeira or Osil or Alonso or Modric in this instance, should he play, when they pick up the ball three quarters of the way high up the pitch in their own half, and Barcelona have a breakdown of possession three quarters of the way up the pitch, the quarterback passers are being asked to launch the ball either into the pockets of space where the fullbacks of Barcelona should be, but given that they're auxiliary wingers, there's space there, or put it straight over the head of Piqué and Puyol to make the defence turn. It's a tactic which Mourinho explained in great detail and with great glee as he joined Real Madrid, having imposed it on Barcelona in the first leg when he took Inter to that semi-final win and subsequently the Champions League win. And you look at the number of times in recent decent results when Madrid have matched Barcelona, there are three principal elements. One, the counter-attack, which they impose on every team if the defensive side is straggled across the pitch when the ball breaks, when the possession breaks down. That counter-attack is Real Madrid's principal option. Two, that long ball, principally that long diagonal ball to, say, Marcelo running down the left wing, and Madrid being quicker to react and quicker to follow as Piqué, Puyol, Mascherano are isolated. And then finally, the set play. Madrid aren't very good at defending set plays. They lose a high proportion of goals to it. But against Barcelona, they regularly impose themselves at set plays, either a scoring header like Ronaldo managed when they last met in the Liga Clásico, which is 2-2, or the type of ball bunching around the box from which Cadeira scored last spring in a 2-1 win at the Camp Nou for Real Madrid. These are notes of what Mourinho will be asking his players to do on Wednesday night. As for Barcelona, I don't think they're going to try and correct the flaws which Mourinho has exposed, because they come as part of the Barcelona game plan. Use the fullbacks high as wingers, keep possession of the ball, and attempt to play quick, clever, intricate passing movements three quarters of the way up the pitch, such that Messi can get a slalom run at the what will be a second choice centre back pairing for Mourinho, given that neither Ramos nor Pepe is available, nor is Contrao, nor is Di Maria, nor is Casillas. And Barcelona's record at the Bernabeu, Oliver, would tell you that on balance, certainly at the Bernabeu, I stress that in Madrid, you know, they've won defeat in 8 visits. And I think that's indicative of a lack of neurosis by Barcelona, confidence, Leo Messi's sublime form, the fact that the Bernabeu crowd has been very, very jumpy when Barcelona come to town. And Madrid, frankly, have found it easier for quite some time now to play away from home at the Camp Nou than at home. But the last time they met, it wasn't that way. The Supercopa second leg in August, when it ended 2-1, could really have been 7-3 to Madrid. So Barcelona's, when you talk about key matchups, one, it's vital that Puyol and Piqué are fit. Two, very important that Alba comes back, because Adriano, clever athlete though he is no left full back. And four, I think that Iniesta hasn't been given a rest, that the tandem of Iniesta, Cesc, Xavi, Messi gets its passing crisp and sharp. That's their antidote to the tactics that described about Mourinho. And frankly, this is about the 15th Clásico since Mourinho took over. If it was one a month, I still couldn't get enough of it, and I'll be riveted tomorrow.
Graham, it's an absolute pleasure to have you join us today. I know we've taken up plenty of your time, so I will let you get off and away from us. But thank you so much, mate. Always a pleasure to chat with you,
pleasure.
Graham. Have a good day.
Great stuff. Enjoy your football.
You too, mate. Enjoy El Clasico on Wednesday night. Graham Hunter, the number one Spanish football correspondent, really, joining us here on World Football Daily to talk us through all things La Liga from the weekend. It was so great to see Bilbao almost back to their best once again, especially the final 20 minutes of that game was just so enthralling, how they were knocking it around Atletico Madrid, but like they weren't even there. And then, of course, we do have coming up this week the big game, the big derby, Barca-Real Madrid. As Graham says, you can never get enough of this tie, and we're all going to be sat down watching it here at WFD, and I'm sure you will be as well. We'll be bringing you a bit more build-up to that game tomorrow on the show, but for now we're going to have to leave La Liga goodbye and take a look at the US men's national team coming right up after this very quick break here on the show.